Reading this morning in preparation for the lesson entitled, Are You Convinced? Is on page 56 of the Pew Bible or on the screen, Exodus chapter 3. Now Moses was tending the flock with Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So he thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, Here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the land of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of the land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey. The home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and the Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen why the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Moses said to God, Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, The God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, What is his name? Then what shall I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, Say to the Israelites, The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. Go, assemble the elders of Israel and say to them, The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, appeared to me and said, I have watched over you and have seen what has been done to you in Egypt. And I have promised to bring you up out of your misery in Egypt, into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. The elders of Israel will listen to you. Then you and the elders are to go to the king of Egypt and say to him, The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. Let us take a 3-day journey into the wilderness to offer sacrifices to the Lord our God. But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless a mighty hand compels him. So I will stretch out my hand and strike the Egyptians with all the wonders that I will perform among them. After that, he will let you go. And I will make the Egyptians favorably disposed toward this people, so that when you leave, you will not go empty-handed. Every woman is to ask her neighbor and any woman living in her house for articles of silver and gold and for clothing, which you will put in on your sons and daughters. And so you will plunder the Egyptians.
How convinced are you that you have your life under control? Oh, good. I'm not the only one. So I guess I'm in a crowd of people who are not fully convinced that they have their life under control. So when our life isn't under control, what do we strive to do the most then? get it under control. You might even say to someone with their life's out of control, will you get your life under control? Or when you're going, I don't know what's going on. What do I need to do? I need to be under control. And one of the things about life is we love control, because without control, we go into what major emotion? Panic and fear. So the reason we want control is to combat this thing that seems to overwhelm us at times when we don't know what's going to happen in the future, how it's going to happen, and how it's going to affect me. So one of the things we want to do is we want to get under control ourselves. We want to get other people under control. And then if we can put everything under the control of our own power, then we can manipulate it to work it out so it works out best for us. So then we don't have to fear anything because we're in control. Wouldn't it be nice to be in control? It would only be nice to be in control if you were able to control one very important thing. Everybody and everything else. And that you could foresee how every decision you made would impact everybody else and the negatives and the positives of that. Are you starting to get a little tired of wanting to be in control? Some of you are going, no, give me a chance. Just give me a chance. Let me do it for once. Because control is at the heart of what brings us a sense of peace, isn't it? When we feel like, I understand what people are going to do. I understand what's happening at work or school or these different things. We like to understand. And it's like a comfortable couch when everything is just kind of plodding along and there's no surprises. It's nice, isn't it? And when someone comes up and tries to change that for you, wait a minute, what are you trying to do? I have it as comfortable as I want it. Don't change it. But the problem is when we get comfortable, we get lazy. And our trust is in ourselves and not in something that has ultimate control. It's an illusion, control, in a broad perspective, because every individual in here, God has given the right to choose for themselves what they want to do and what they don't want to do. And no one else gets to control that. And if you ask me how much control I have over much of what I do or don't do, I'll tell you that I fail miserably a lot in controlling. And I'm going, God, just fill me with the spirit of wisdom and spirit of self-control. But the control piece comes in with trust. The reason I do it so poorly for myself is because I'm trusting myself. I hate to admit that. But why not? It's the truth. So when we want to have control and we realize that we don't, it could be, man, you lost control at work and something's going on and you don't even know if you're going to have a job next week. Or somebody just came and told me, you're no longer employed here. It could be in a relationship where someone says, we need to talk. It just shivers up my spine to hear that phrase, we need to talk. So when we think about even like in a medical situation, we try to eat well, live well, but then something goes wrong with our body that we're supposed to be in control of, and our body says, ha, ha, ha. Laughs in our face. You think you're in control of me? You're not. You're just a passenger. And we go, who do I go to that knows better than me of what's going on in my body? We go to a professional, right? So when life is out of control, when we realize, we come to the awareness that I don't have a handle on this at all, I have to make sure and trust that when I put my trust in someone else, that they have sufficient skills to get me where I need to be. And even though it's scary because I'm not in control. We have to have faith that the one in control knows what they're doing. Anybody here know who Jeff Gordon is? A couple of you? Yeah, race car driver. If you were going to do anything with Jeff Gordon, you know, go for a ride with him, you'd probably want him to be at the wheel because he's probably clocked more hours on the road than any of us. But I want you to see this video. It's a Pepsi commercial. And Jeff Gordon dresses up so that he won't be noticed, and he takes this powerful car on a test drive. So go ahead, Ben.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Nice and easy. Head on out whenever you're ready.
Are you ready to go ahead and drive?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Oh, whoa.
That's all right.
A little more than I'm used to.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's got some power, so just get a feel for it. Okay. Okay, all right. He's off just a little bit. He's off.
So I was thinking a little more age on me, some wrinkles, a little dorky, maybe some facial hair. And somebody that I can pull off a fun prank with. Let's go have some fun. My good friends at Pepsi Max have hooked us up with this cool cam. So these are the glasses cam to show you everything that I see.
How you doing?
Hello. I'm Mike.
Steve, nice to meet you, Mike. I saw you sort of gravitated towards the Camaro. You thinking about getting one?
Oh, no. This way too much car for me.
Well, it's a lot of power, but they've designed it to be very safe.
I don't know if I can handle it. I've never driven anything like this before.
Well, I tell you what, I think a way to really make you feel comfortable would be to put you behind the wheel.
You're good.
What are you driving now?
Oh, just a minivan.
Oh, yeah.
What am I signing here?
You're not obligated. It's just a checkout sheet for a test drive. You're not obligated to anything. It's just so we know who's out. Let's go give it a drive.
I'm getting a little nervous.
No. I'll be right there beside you. There are your keys, sir.
Thank you, Steve.
You'll have to unlock it, Mike.
Oh. Yeah. Thank you.
There we go.
Oh, yeah. What a car.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we better buckle up.
Yeah. Good call. Power door locks, standard, of course.
You are liable for any damages to the vehicle, so please stop the car, or at least slow down. Slow down. You can't go through that gate, Mike. Stop.
Okay, so, do you ever feel like this in life? Now, when you're in a situation where you're totally out of control, one of the things he wants to do is either grab the wheel from Jeff Gordon or get him to stop. So put yourself in this guy's shoes if you can. He doesn't know who's really in control, does he? He thinks that his life is on the line. And there's no hope. But as this drive ends, we're going to see something really interesting that happens at the end. You turn the volume up, Ben, please.
There's a camera. There's cameras. Look, it was all just fun. Look, I'm Jeff Gordon.
Keep playing it, please. Keep playing it, please.
Sorry, man. Oh. Sorry.
Want to do it again?
Yeah, let's do it again.
Did you catch that last part? I think you did.
Yeah. Want
to do it again? Yes. Why? Go ahead.
He then realized he could have trusted him, and he didn't know it until then.
Yes. Once he realized who was behind the wheel, he said, I can put my life in your hands, and I know for a fact that you're going to make sure that I get out of this car. At the end of the ride, I know that things are going to be okay. God wants you to understand that too. You would, yeah, when you cannot get out of, you know, that reptilian part of your brain that is fear, fight or flight, you know, all you can do is think about survival. You know, logic goes out the door. And isn't that really the case when we get into situations in life when it's just reaction? Yeah, he knows that he's got it covered. So one of the things that Moses is having a problem with is he's not convinced that this God can be trusted that appears to him in this burning bush. He already tried 40 years ago to bring this people out of captivity. He tried and they rejected him. And he said, well, what's the point? 40 years later, God appears to him and he calls to him, Moses, Moses. And remember, we talked a few weeks ago about what the word Moses means. It's drawn out, to draw out, right? So what God is going to do with this person, he's going to draw him out of himself. He's going to draw the Israelites out of their captivity through this man that he says, you need to trust me. And one of the things that God has said to him, he says, I know what you're going through. I've seen their misery. I've heard their cries. I have not forgotten you. Now, when you're in the midst of something that it's just reaction, or you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, maybe the bills are coming due and the money's short and you're going, man, I could be evicted. You're going, where do I go? What do I do when I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow? And more that I get anxious about tomorrow, it's interesting. Once tomorrow comes and goes, it seems to work out in a way that I never imagined it would work out. That some way, somehow, things are going to happen and I'll be okay. But we have to trust that God is there. He says, I will save you from Pharaoh's hold. Now, there's this thing that this Pharaoh, he's not going to let these people go because they're his slaves. They're his, you know, they're doing this great project in Egypt. Why would I let these people go when they're the ones who are doing all the work and I don't even have to pay for it? I'm not going to let these people go. But God says, I will save you from that hold. I will cause them to be blessed in a way they can't imagine. Did you hear at the end of the passage where God said to them, have the ladies go to their neighbors and ask them for stuff. And he says, I will make them favorably disposed to them. So Pharaoh on one hand is holding a choke grip around these people. But the people in the masses, they're favorably disposed to the Israelites. And they give them stuff. And he goes, you're going to put this stuff on your kids. And and you think about, their clothes don't wear out their whole journey. When God tells them to put together a tabernacle for them, where are they getting all the stuff to build the tabernacle, to worship their God? It's coming from all this stuff. So God is planning this. Do they know why? No, they don't know why. They don't know how it's going to work out. But see, that's the hard part we have, is we want to know how it's going to work out, the way it's going to work out, rather than trusting how it will work out. He said, and I'm going to take you to a good land, a good and spacious land. But the problem is, did you hear the list of people who are living there? Many of them are warrior nations. It's like, well, that's good. Take me into that beautiful milk and honey land. But, you know, there are people there that are bigger and badder than us. He says, I'm going to send you to draw them out, Moses. And Moses tried and tried and tried not to be the one. But finally he said, all right, I'll do it. And he goes to this people because he had to believe that the I am, the one who created all these things, the one who knows how it's all going to work out, this I am, he says, I'm with you. Right? So whenever you're in those situations where you're praying to God, I don't know what the future looks like, we have to go back to this one phrase that this God that oversees all things, he is with us, who appears in ways that are unimaginable in life. He is with us. Even if we don't see a burning bush, he is with us. Even when it's painful and struggling, even when we get to the edge of the end of our life, we have to remember he is with us. The promise is there because he has sent his son to die for us. We're on this continuum of skepticism and trust. Moses had to move out of skepticism into trust so that he would follow the instruction of God, so that he could even see how the mighty hand of God would save. We have to trust to see it come about. So what great power, we have to ask, has a hold of you? What great temptation, what addiction, what's something that you're putting your faith in that you think, this makes me feel so good just for a moment, and that's all I need because this other parts of life are so painful? What is it that is holding you back from totally trusting that God will give you what you need when you need it? What is holding on to you? God, just like he broke the hand of Pharaoh on a nation, he can break the hold of anything that is holding you back. What keeps you enslaved to rebellion to God? Is it, well, if I know what I should do, I know better than God because, you know, I look at God's plan, and Jim talked about foolishness. A lot of times we can sit back and look at the plan of God and go, man, that's just utter foolishness. I wouldn't do it that way. I would do it differently. I would do it so no one goes through pain, no one goes through suffering. But do you realize that for Moses to go to Pharaoh and for Pharaoh to let the people go and for the Israelites to want to go to this place that they didn't know that was going to be so much better, they had to go through a trial, a pain that said, what you have now doesn't satisfy you. Because why would they leave if it did? So we have to understand there's times when there's pain in life, and I'm not saying all pain is because of this, but we have to think, what pains in my life are there because I'm holding so tightly to something that God says, let go. You're trusting something that won't satisfy ultimately in your life. Is it fear of failure that you're afraid to take the next step or put yourself out there? Some people have the fear of success. Well, if I go out there and do something well and it succeeds, man, people are going to want me to do it again. And man, I just got lucky the first time. And if I do it again, I know I'm going to blow it because I always do. Well, what about the time you just succeeded? Oh, that was an anomaly. Maybe not. But we have to remember, God says, but I'm with you. Whether it succeeds or whether it fails, I'm still with you. Could it be fear of missing out? That's a big thing anymore in society. People are so connected to their technologies because they're afraid they're going to miss out on something. Well, guess what? You're sitting here, you're missing out on a whole world full of stuff. But the one thing you're not missing out on is hearing about a God who created all this whole world, who says, you are valuable and I long for you. What do you think is more important to miss out on? Less important to understand God cares about you. To give you something to stand upon so that when you go out into this world that blows back and forth, that you can stand firm. It's not the feet. Fear the unknown. Fear of judgment. But we're told that God has sent his son, that he came down from heaven. He took on human form. He took on all of our pain and our suffering so that we wouldn't have to go through the rejection of God. He took it on himself so that we could embrace the acceptance of God through his blood, through his guidance. He leads us to the promised land. He says, holy brothers and sisters, and he's writing to a people who are struggling with being persecuted. And he's saying, don't let go. He says, fix your thoughts on Jesus, who we acknowledge. He's our apostle. He's our high priest. He was faithful to the one who appointed him. And he wasn't just faithful to God who appointed him. He's being faithful to us because he's opening a way back into that relationship of Eden, that he is the way for us. He has been found worthy of great honor, more than Moses, who was a builder of the house. And he has greater honor than the house itself. For every house is built by someone, but God is the builder of everything. Moses was faithful as a servant in all of God's house, bearing witness to what would be spoken by God in the future. But Christ is faithful as the son over God's house. And we are his house if we hold firmly to the confidence that we hoped in which we glory. That is faith and trust, not skepticism. So the sermons that I've been preaching, I'm going to be comparing this journey of the Israelites out of their captivity, which is comparable to us as we are journeying home to the promised land. What is that like? What are the same things that they struggle with that we struggle with? How is God intervening? What words did he say to them that I need to remember, that I need to hear, so that I can trust? So what holds you back from trusting God? What do you ultimately trust in? How is this focus of trust guiding your daily choices? And does this trust offer anything beyond this world? And where are your choices leading you? Is it on a path towards a land of promise, a land of glory, a land of exaltation where you will finally fully understand how precious you are when you're in front of the Father God and he says, well done, good and faithful servant. Building that trust that this God knows what we need. But what it takes from us is we sang a song, May My Spirit yield as a deer pants for water. Our spirit has to yield to God. And do you remember when the church was kicked off 40 days after the Passover at Pentecost? What appeared over the apostles' heads or the crowd's heads? It was there. Flames of fire. God is indicating to them and to the people that I am here. I am with you. Do not fear. And I will go with you. If you're a Christian, you have the Spirit of God as a guide. The Holy Spirit's living within you. Do not fear. God knows you will. But he's calling you to trust so that you will not fear. That no matter what you face in this life, even when you face death, you do not fear because he has promised to you life now, life forever, through the blood of Jesus, to the glory of the Father. And it's to him we stand and give praise. Let's stand and sing.
When we walk with the Lord in the light of his word, what